Blog Talk Radio.
Regal Poet Radio.
You are listening to the Regal Poet Radio Show with your host, Imone M. Prosper. Are you tired of being undervalued as an artist? Do you have a passion to sell your art but don't know where to start? Are you on a successful path but need encouragement? Tune in to the Regal Poet Radio Show, the conduit for the poet entrepreneur. Every week, we focus on topics that are set for the professional artist fully engaged in the creative economy. I am your host, Imone M. Prosper, poet, entrepreneur, and the advocate for the creative arts economy. Our mission is to feed the artist who spends their life creating profound experiences within their art with the best practical and advanced practices they need to be empowered, energized, confident, and prepared. If you are a beginner, you need this. If you're a seasoned veteran, you need this. And with 12 years of experience behind me, the Regal Poet Radio Show is not only designed to deliver the best information, but this platform allows you to hear from successful industry leaders and poet entrepreneurs making a major impact in the world of poetry. What we know is that it is easy to find an open mic to perform, but there are a small number of places for the professional poet to go to learn how to build a thriving poetry career or business. Tune in to the Regal Poet Radio Show, the conduit for the poet entrepreneur, as we focus every week on the topics to help build up your entrepreneurial of the arts business. Share, leave a comment, or chat live on blogtalkradio.com/Regal Poet, where I am committed to developing not only a respected line of professional poets, but savvy poets with additional E on the end for entrepreneur. And come get poet savvy with Regal Poet Radio.
Welcome to the Regal Poet Radio Show. Hi, I am so glad to have everyone come and listen in with us. Again, I am your host, Imone and Prosper, and we are the conduit for the poet and entrepreneur. It is so awesome to be with you tonight and be able to discuss with you just yet another reason why we love being on this program. So, of course, we're dedicated to highlighting not only the artists that have really made a difference within our community, but also those individuals that have taken it a step further by creating their own platforms and areas for artists to thrive and to showcase their work. And as we've been talking about for the last 3 weeks, we've been talking about, well, this entire month, really, it's the month of September. We're already in October, can't believe it, but in the month of September, we were talking about 100,000 poets and musicians for change. That is something that Regal Poet was able to be a massive part of, and we're so proud that we are finally done with our awesome, awesome show. We had such a great time. It was wonderful. We appreciate everyone that was able to come out and share with us the change and also what we were able to accomplish with that, being that this is the third year that we worked with Francesca Smith, who was able to bring her Hollywood event to Fort Lauderdale. But this is the fifth year of 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change. As I told you before, it was founded in 2011. It allows for artists globally to develop and curate independently run events with the focus on change, pretty much promotes community engagement, peace and sustainability, one of the largest artist rosters and listservs of its kind. 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change has been elevated, has seen elevation within artist involvement since its inception, allowing writers, poets, musicians, and arts professionals to discover an artistic community worldwide, which is organic and a holistic approach to everything. definitely, we always send you to 100tpc.org to see more, see all of our events, hashtag that on Twitter, and you'll see all that we're able to do. So, of course, you're now wondering, well, Imone, who do you have on the show? You're talking about 100,000 Poets for Change. Who do you have on the show? Well, on the show today, we have Michael Rothenberg. He's actually the founder of the program, and we're so happy to have him on the line with us to speak on 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change, get his input on how the events went across the globe, because he was able to kind of be at the controller seat and see everything. But then also we'll get to learn more about him. He is also an artist. He's a poet with many collections. He has a web sign of poetry, which he's going to talk to us about. And there's a lot of writing material within that. His songs has been featured in Hollywood Pictures. So not only does he walk the walk, he talks the talk too. I think I got that phrase completely incorrect. So let me go ahead before I make another bad joke or use another bad cliche and bring Michael Rothenberg on the show with us. Michael,
hi,
are you there?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I know I'm either walking or talking. I don't, half the time I don't know what I'm doing either.
Yes, thank you for coming on. I said, you know, we had to have you on the show right away since we just ended the events last weekend. It was awesome. And how is it for you every year? I'm really diving in this past year, and it just seems so large. How is it for you year after year seeing all of these curated events pop up?
The first year it was just a shock. I mean, because I didn't know that it was going to happen. I mean, it was this thing that I put out on Facebook. Would you like to do this? To organize an event on a certain day, and simultaneously with people around the world to talk about peace, justice, sustainability. And I didn't think anybody would be responding at all. And the next thing I knew, the first year we had 700 people sign up in 95 countries to do events, and I didn't really even believe it as it was happening. So, and then when the posters started to come in, and when I started to hear personally from people and see the photos and videos, it was just I was panicked actually, because it was not something I really thought was happening, because I didn't think people would. I kind of posed it as a challenge. More, it wasn't a part of a business plan. It was something that I posed as a challenge because I felt that people were not engaged enough in their communities, and they were not connecting enough as artists, and that people were very much in these little cubicles, and they were too busy, making money or something, and that they weren't taking responsibility for this. And I learned as a poet, that was one of the things I learned about coming up, that a poet, that was what poets do. I mean, of course, that was my generation. I was young in the 60s. That our poet heroes were radicals and activists, and they were engaged in the community. So I thought that's what it should be. And here I was, and nobody seemed to be doing much, and the world was falling apart, and I'm going, oh, yeah. I said to somebody, I think there ought to be 100,000 Poets for Change, and they said, that's a great idea. And I said, yeah, another great idea for people who don't care. And then I went and did it, actually said, well, I'll show you for sure that nobody cares. I mean, I've been working as an environmentalist and political activist my whole life, and so just to show that people don't care, I created this event page, and then all of a sudden people cared, and I'm going, I was telling Terry, my partner, who Terry Carrion, who is also co-founder of 100,000 Poets for Change, is, I said, Terry, there's 10 people who want to do this. And Michael, here we go again. You're another. No, really, they want to do this. And then we 30 people. Oh, yeah. Terry, I think there's like 100 people, and there are like 20 countries, and she comes over to me, and she looks, she said, what are you doing? I said, look, I'm telling you, these are really people who are doing, but it's Facebook. She says, you're doing it on Facebook, you know how people are. I said, yeah, but I mean, if a lot of them do something, some of them do something, that's pretty great. And she got really interested. She said, well, you should set up, we should create a website, 100tpc.org. And we should archive all the, put all their photos and everything, posters up, and let each other, everyone know about it. So she created all that. And she's Spanish, and so she was able to speak to all the people contacting us from other countries, and in, from Spain, South America, Central America. And then Stanford University, I'm going on and on. Stanford University contacted us, and they said, well, we heard about this. It's a historic thing. It seems to be the largest poetry event that we ever heard of. And we would like to, it's historic. We'd like to, we will archive everything that people send you. So you put it on the website, you help work with us, and we'll make sure that this becomes a historic, a record of what happened. And then, so you can imagine, the first year it was like all learning curve and shock and
absolutely
panicking, you know, like, what do I do now? What do I do? What does it mean? What do I have to do? What do I have to do? And I have no money, and I'm not getting any funding, and I don't, it's too fast. And it went on. It went to the second year, and there's still no funding. It kept on going. And third year, and of course, as time went on, I became calmer about the process, and I was reassured to see that it was expanding, and it was becoming more real to people. You know, like, this is a real thing. This is like a legitimate thing. This isn't just. I use the analogy that it's not a goldfish swallowing contest. Like, how many can you do? But it's a movement. It's about. It's great to have many events and many readings, but what is the substance of what's taking place? Because the issue here, for me, is substance.
I would agree. I think that's great. That's definitely what attracted me when I first heard about it in 2011. The substance, the title, it was very engaging and captivating. And I think that you're right in the sense that many of us many contemporaries that would be part of maybe an older generation saw poetry and saw poets, and maybe everyone sees poets the same way, but do not want to take on that responsibility that poets usually were activists, and they were community leaders and community engaged citizens and thought provoking, and they were in the trenches, and that's where their writings came from.
Right.
So, yeah. So,
that's what I thought. I mean, I know I have people say to me, well, I don't mix politics and poetry. And I just thought to myself, well, how do you make this distinction at all? I mean, the very act of picking something that is actually somewhat eccentric. I mean, it's poetry. It's not law. It's not an accountant. It's poetry. I mean, it's already counterculture. So it implies that there's something questioning and engaging. And then, of course, you take it as far as you want. Not everybody wants to go marching in the street, but I do. I mean, that's what I thought was happening, would happen, and that is happening. And it is happening with 100,000 Poets for Change. Everything from demonstrations to poetry reading. I mean, it doesn't have to be that. It's the very fact when people say, well, what are you changing, really? What are you changing? Well, they say, what do you mean by change? And I say, read the description. It says exactly what kind of change we're talking about. Peace, justice, sustainability. These are real things. Homelessness are issues. Poverty are issues. War is issues. Gender problems, you know, but prejudices, and I mean, just discussing this stuff is a beginning of change. Entering a dialogue is a beginning of change. And I said in the description that I gave, the first week I wrote an expansion to answer two questions. Why? What kind of change we're talking about, and what do we do? First, and what kind of change you're talking about, I said, like, if I am living here in Sonoma County, California, and I talk to Francesca in Hollywood, and I meet someone, or you, like as we're speaking now, or I meet somebody in Qatar or Nigeria or Morocco or Egypt, I've never spoken with these people. They don't know me. I don't know them. Suddenly we're exchanging poetry. Suddenly we're talking about issues that we care. Suddenly we become a global community. I mean, what is going on that we don't even know people down the street from us? There's a problem. We're isolated. So here, the change is bridging this isolation and creating a community that knows each other and cares about each other. It's important to, like, end world hunger, and we have events where people raise money for homeless and for cleaning supplies for a drug rehab clinic, things like that. I mean, I've seen it happen. They're doing it. But it's also us talking now for the first time, and also talking. We have experienced, most of us, a situation where there's gatekeepers, whether it's in the university or it's in your neighborhood poetry circles or something. There's always these gatekeepers, people who create these groups, cliques, and they control those things. And you have to go through their door to get to be involved, to be. 100,000 Poets for Change says from the beginning there are no gatekeepers. If 20 people want to do an event in Hollywood, they can. And as much as I love Francesca, she'd never ask. I wouldn't give an exclusive to anybody. It's not mine to give. The basic principle was we are opening up the doors. We are the organizers. You are an organizer. I'm an organizer. We have the authority. We can give ourselves the authority to do things, to connect, to publish each other, to share with each other, to open. We don't need those people who say, no, you can't, without coming to me first. So that's a big change. This is a substantial structural change in community that I'm talking about. And that's what I'm talking about. And so how do you do it? You do it any way you want. You can do it with, like, a potluck. You can do a march. You can do a four-day workshops and readings and dance. Mix up your arts. I mean, that's the other thing. Is I learned when I was younger that the arts come out of a milieu. They come out of a period of time, a community, like in the 60s or in the Renaissance or in, you know, the East Village or whatever. Poets, painters, musicians, sculptors, dancers, they're all coming out of the same community simultaneously. They're manifesting these creative impulses simultaneously. This poet goes to that concert and sees this person dance, and they go, well, that's a very deep dance. That's deep, you know, I mean, next thing you know, everyone is influencing each other. So you are influenced by a dancer, and I'm influenced by a musician, and maybe we're collaborating. Maybe we're doing the show together. That's MCU. That's where that is a creative community that makes life happen and
Absolutely.
Make art happen. So what happened is everybody was very professionalized, and this is a poet community, this is a music community. We don't mix, we don't work together, we don't do this together. What do I want to hang around with a poet for? You don't make any money. What do I want to hang around with a musician for? All they do is beat the drums. They never give you a chance to say anything. I mean, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, absolutely. We were able to completely obliterate that notion with the past event that we had, you know, mixing poets and musicians and various artists, drummers and the like, even the photographers and the videographers had their say and their place. And then we had panel discussions about being an artist entrepreneur. If this is what you would like to do full time, these are the people that are doing it, you know, and those were the elements of change that we would to bring to the attention of others. And also that professionalism that comes with curating an event, which a lot of times artists are not familiar with. And we really wanted to showcase that. And you guys actually had some change for yourselves becoming a 501c3. What year did that happen, and what has that meant for 100,000 Poets and Musicians for Change?
Well, it's about two years, that we became a 501c3. There's a couple of reasons. One, we needed to be able to receive money and from donations and to offer ourselves as a tax-deductible group. We needed a vehicle to do that, and the 501c3 was the way to do that. We needed to be able to qualify. In order to qualify for some grants, we needed to be able to be a 501c3 just to even get in the door. And for a lot of people, it's a legitimate thing. They go, oh, well, are you, you know, what are you? You are an organization, or what are you? Just a bunch of yahoos? Or no, yes, we are a 501c3. We're very official. So that's why we did it. It was a brutal process. I don't like it. I didn't like it. A lot of paperwork. It was expensive. Dealing with the IRS was complicated. There was a lot of difficulty in making sure that the language of what our, you know, what is our mission, and making sure it fits the requirements of a 501c3. And so we did it, and we didn't get much more money. But it's done. If someone ever shows up and says, hey, are you a 501c3? I got a bunch of money. Well, that'll be cool. You know,
right, it's ready. Well, we talk about that on this show. You know, you can't just be ready. It's better to be ready and not need it than to need it and not be ready. So,
exactly.
It's
definitely
good.
But we didn't
do
it right away. I mean, we didn't go right away. We talked about it right away. And of course, you know, well, we should be a 501c3, no problem. But we were also, I have had that past experiences with it being 501c3. I'm the co-founder and president of a group called Poets in Need, which is for 10 years help funding for poets in crisis. And it's a whole deal. I mean, it's business. It's to be run a 501c3. It takes some kind of rigor. I just was tired and like, how, I don't want to do this. I leave it to someone younger. But we did it. I'm glad we did it. And I agree. Once you know that you really want to do something like this, and you're going to need funding. But there are other options. There are fiscal sponsors around who are 501c3s that are willing to adopt groups that are doing nonprofit type of work, and they become your fiscal sponsor. And so you sign an agreement with them, and they take a small percentage to process your funding, and there are foundations out there that are willing to make donations to a fiscal sponsor for a group. So I think people need to consider that. A lot of people don't know
Absolutely.
About it. And there's groups. There's a couple of companies in couple of foundations in Southern California that really have hundreds of their fiscal sponsor for hundreds of groups. If you qualify, you could then you can save yourself spending thousands of dollars with accountants and lawyers and going through a complicated legal process. So I would look it up before I jumped.
Right, and that's such a good point. I'm so glad how you blended, because as I told you earlier, we talk about being, do you consider yourself an artist entrepreneur, and what that means, and you just hit it right on that head. It's not necessarily if you're one of those people that think it's pretty icky to combine arts and business, let someone else do it. And I know plenty of organizations that their success has been because they've been adopted by a nonprofit organization, and that mutual agreement actually serves both of them. You know, we have a great organization that where people are working for a goal, and then the organization looks good for supporting. So
that's what their mission is. I mean, we put in our mission that in some day we hope we're able to help poetry and art groups who want to have peace and sustainability-based events. So, I mean, we're not doing that now, but we do a little bit. I mean, we are helping everyone archive and put everything into preserve it so that the records of who these groups are will be known in the future, if that matters to people. I think it's a good thing. It's the history. It's the story of who we are as a culture. That's what art is. So documentation is not tangential. It's essential. And we see ourselves as offering that now, and as far as funding, well, we're not there yet, but we hope we can help groups around the world with these kinds of actions. I mean, it's interesting
thing
you talked to me about, mentioned entrepreneurial artists. It's an interesting idea, phrase, because I mean, there's some belief that poets and poets should never be entrepreneurial. There are people they think it should never be considered a career because there's something to say it, but it's too crass, it's too businesslike, it's too motive, it's motive oriented rather than writing oriented. It's not about creation, it's about career or something like that. And
right.
I mean, I grew up as my father was a lawyer, and so I learned from him. Of course, I have his entrepreneurial spirit, but how I apply it, is personal. So I apply it as being a community organizer.
I don't want to lose the call with you because this is such great information. I do want everyone to check out 100tcc.org. This is like our final 30 seconds. we'll have Michael
already
on the line with us. Yes, can you imagine? Can you imagine? So we'll have Michael will be back on the line with us. I think we need to continue this convo. Check out 100tcc.org and learn more about the programming that way. And don't forget, guys, be yourself, be real. We'll talk with you guys soon.